TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Joanna Macy, Resilience. On June 6, 2019, Joanna Macy, the environmental activist, author, scholar of Buddhism and deep ecology, was one of two keynote speakers at the New School at Commonweal's Resilience Project. A longtime San Francisco Bay Area resident, she had just celebrated her 90th birthday. The question that the participants at the Commonweal event had come to explore was, is resilience a possible response in the face of climate change and civilizational collapse? And what might resilience look like? Joanna Macy gave a personal and movingly psychophilosophical talk, led a brief exercise in open questioning, and closed with generous credits to writers and their ideas that are helpful in navigating and intervening in the collapsing civilization around us. Here is Joanna Macy.
I am so excited to be with an audience of people who are not afraid to hear about what's happening to their world. So I could talk all day, but I'm not going to. I want to just say that in 1977, that is 42 years ago, I went to the Boston Coliseum with two of my teenage children. I had just completed a PhD on systems theory and Buddhist teachings, and looking forward to an academic career. It would be a late starting career since I was already in my late 40s. At any rate, the Cousteau Society was putting on an incredible day on the threats to the biosphere. And on every level of the Colosseum, there were booths and displays, panels, and rooms with people discussions and lectures on absolutely every aspect of what we're doing, not just the ocean, though Jacques-Yves Cousteau was there himself and shared his deep concern about the disappearance of the plankton, as important to our oxygen as the forests are. And he was very discouraged and discouraging about that. I was familiar with almost all the information because my family and I had been very involved in a macroanalysis seminars from the Movement for a New Society that we'd been leading. But something happened to me at the end of that day. It's like all the information that I had, which was up here, some pins were pulled out, and it all cascaded down to every part of my body, heart, gut. And I heard myself say, we are destroying our world. And I knew that in a way that was beyond discussion, because I'd been living with the data for previous decades. I went into a dark night of the soul for about 15 months because I didn't have anybody I could talk to about it, compare the symptoms, how it feels. For one, I wanted to protect my family. I didn't want them to know what I was going through. And my peers, academic in the Department of Religion, wouldn't you think? Avoidance, patronizing. Surely, Joanne, you're not thinking that all consciousness in the universe is in this one planet. It's the planet we have. It's the planet we know. It's the planet we are. What brought me out was Ralph Nader's Critical Mass Focus Organization, and I joined a group in a lawsuit against a nuclear power plant to windward of Washington to try to stop them from racking the fuel rods too close together that the regulations permitted and brings them close to criticality. and the defeat of that, but it didn't matter whether it won or not. I had this information that I wanted to tell people. It was about the health effects. That was what I was supposed to look up. I went right to the Nuclear Regulatory Committee. No one wanted to hear it. We're not surprised. How do you bring it up? By the way, did you know? Let me talk to you about it. Have you ever thought? And I became so fascinated by the phenomenon of denial, of repressing the negative emotions about our world. And then I thought, well, there is Buddha nature in us all. There is what Thich Nhat Hanh, that wonderful Zen master, said to those who said, what should we do to help our world? And he said, the most important thing to do is to hear the sounds of the earth crying in your heart. What a statement! As if the sounds of the earth crying were inside me. But then I thought, well, that's a natural thing to say, given what I've learned about systems and about the Buddha Dharma. So I began gathering people together for the purpose, and I'd been teaching meditation too, so I started there, of walking around pain. What's it like to feel physical and mental and moral pain? How do we speak? I got it right away that what people needed was not me telling them anything, was not me being a Paul Revere about the condition of the world, but to invite them, create a situation in which they could speak. And I found that open sentences, for starters, was great. Much better than a question like, what do you think? How do you feel? Give them an open sentence. When I face the collapse of our society, I feel. Now you just repeat after me and end that sentence. All right. Well, when I face the collapse of society, I have, and then it starts. So it's like the open sentence is a kind of slide that you go down and into. And then pretty soon, it feels so good to hear from parts of yourself that you had been shutting up in an inner closet. I began to realize that we were tapping not only repressed emotions, but what they could bridge to, which was the realm of moral imagination. And I think many of us here this morning were speaking from that. How do we imagine that we can live up to this, be this great simplification? This book I brought along to show you, it's from in France last year, Une autre fin du monde est possible. Another end of the world is possible. Where they are looking, and the great young Pablo Servigne and others are doing beautiful work publicly and with young people flocking to talking about collapse and even developing a school of thought, which they call collapsologie. Yes. So that we began to see, we were playing around, but that we were following a plot line in a given workshop, whether it was a day or a half a day or a weekend or a week, that was in the form of a cycle or a wheel, but it's like more like a spiral because it could go around where you begin with where all the great spiritual traditions begin with our full presence. Because what this world asks of us more than anything else, not our smarts, not our saintliness, not our superego, but our full presence to show up however we are. If we just be present, and a tool for that is gratitude. Even if you're saying, now the spices I love, or the weather I love, or the look in the eyes of old men that I love, anything. And that helps you get out of, you can't experience gratitude and feel defended against painful information, can you? And that grounds you. Also, what I liked about gratitude always, as I discovered, was that gratitude is there, is independent of external circumstances. The indigenous people know that, especially those in this country. They're great Thanksgiving. Whatever's going on, don't we? That's the moment for gratitude, and it's there. And also, gratitude is a revolutionary act. And if you believe, as I do, that the corporate capitalism and the consumer society has a lot to do with the breakdown of our natural systems in this, gratitude is wonderful because it frees you from the neediness that is required to be subjected, to be a part, the self-loathing even that's required and engendered by the consumer society. If you don't get this connections right away, you will in a minute. So there's gratitude, and then we go into honoring our pain for the world. We don't try to explain it. We don't diagnose it. We don't try to excuse it. We don't dress it up in other clothes. We don't sit on it. We respect it. We honor it for what it is. The heart is breaking. It hurts to see. It's awful to feel. I don't want to know. Tell me all the things you don't want to know. That's a great exercise. So this was a whole process of discovery for me because nobody else I knew was doing this. So never be afraid to invent new things. And I've found that the pain for the world would certainly include outrage and anger, certainly include sorrow, great grief, dread and fear, and also deprivation and failure and powerlessness. And we saw to speak this in open sentences is fine, but the best is through ritual. In a ritual, you know, you can speak for the whole, and the definitions and the conventions around that make it a ritual is that you sense you're speaking for the whole. It's in an archetypal voice from this moment. And actually, it's beautiful how the language sometimes that is so suitably prophetic and poetic and deep. And then, so you're suffering with the world. That's what we do. That's what all this equipment is in our heart, minds, and fingertips and our neurology. We suffer with our world, just like the way we love our world. And the literal meaning of suffering with is compassion. You're a compassionate one. That's we're born, that's our equipment. That's the definition of a bodhisattva. So we reframe just feeling the pain and understanding it. And then being liberated from being anchored in a separate self. So this, I found that the sequestration of the self in 5 centuries of hyper-individualism of the Western culture, which is being broadcast, you know, through or taken globally through our global economy, is a cruel thing for us all, that we put so much of our sense of what and who we are into this little prison cell of the ego. Or as one of my teachers, James Hillman, the Jungian psychologist, that talked about it as the lonely cowboy ego. And we could, in order to be real in our times and take in what's happening to our world, there's this, not as it should, but it seems to happen naturally, that the world becomes your larger body, that you are a living body within the living body of Earth. You are in conversation with it, but you are also in Earth's hands, and that there are all kinds of spiritual ways of being able to express that. And then the next part of the plot line is seeing with new eyes, where you can begin largely through role plays to play around with deep ecology and deep time. And deep ecology, which we drew a lot from the deep long-range ecology movement of decades back, has the notion that as we mature as a self, we grow our ecological self, which is you who you indisputably, preciously, not like any other, but you're held in this larger body that lets you display your uniqueness and act your responsibility of participation. Choice. I feel that at the core of all that I've learned and have worked with, what's guided me over the last 42 years of this, is a, from the beginning, from systems and Dharma, it's where they come together, it's where you find the self is always changing. But if you're looking for it, it's in the act of choice making, in decision making, in what you want and choose and act on. And that this can help you to the moment where you are in the present, where not yesterday and not tomorrow, where you can be with this unfolding drama of this beautiful planet. And then the story then, you can see the story you're acting in, you can choose. There are three major things happening at the same time. One is the Industrial Growth Society. And those are mostly what you hear people talking about in the great institutions and the government and the media and the military. And then there's another story, and we call it the Great Unraveling. So we have been working for this four decades with the sense, and that's sort of built into the Limits to Growth, which goes back to 1970, with the fact that we have the data to show that the web of life is unraveling. And the third choice is, or what's happening, is that there is a transition. There is the great turning to a life-sustaining society. We don't call it sustainable. That's a tricky word. Life-sustaining. And that we can find our way into that exciting drama. That's our choice we can make again and again. Thank you for listening.
That is Joanna Macy, the environmental activist, author, scholar of Buddhism and deep ecology, and keynote speaker at the Resilience Project in Bolinas, California. There's a longer video posted on the New School at Commonweal website that also shows in detail the open question exercise that she led next. The participants were asked to face each other in pairs, preferably with someone they didn't know. Joanna Macy then gave two open questions that the participants repeated and completed to each other. The first open question was, as I face the collapse of our civilization, what I'm grateful for is... And the question for the second round was, as I face the collapse of our civilization, what breaks my heart is... In the end, all participants had answered both questions. Here to give you a sense of how animated the open question exchange became is the closing bell and Joanna Macy's inspiring comments on the broken heart.
Thank you very much, and take time to thank your partner. First of all, I want you to remember or know that the heart that breaks open can hold the whole universe It's that big. It is in this precious present moment that we can feel the vitality and presence, the full presence of ourself in this world, again and again and again. Now, there are a couple of things I wanted to call your attention to. I have found that there's a book on collapse that's helpful called Reinventing Collapse by Dmitry Orlov. You say he lived through the collapse of the political economy in Russia between roughly 1988 and 95. There it was not a ecological devastation so much as, of course, an economic one. But it went through the bottom falling out of people's lives, their money meaning nothing, their rank meaning nothing, and how they got by and what they learned. So there's that, Reinventing Collapse. And that's sort of interesting exercises, like something as simple as reflecting in your life, of determining what's a necessity and what's a convenience. Looking around my home, which seems all pretty simple, but then I think of when you get down to it, there are really three things we need to stay alive: air, water, food. And the ways you reconfigure for yourself the productivity of your life. Richard Heinberg's book, Afterburn, and particularly what I love about this book is very few people talk about it, but he calls it a chapter on our evanescent culture. And he's looking at how dependent, and haven't seen this in any comments so far today or heard it, but we're electricity dependent. And not only so, okay, well, the lights go out, they go out. And our ancestors up just to, you know, a few generations ago, they didn't have electricity. No, we can just adjust back. For many reasons. And there's to one he goes into here, which is the loss of our knowledge through digitalization. So much of what we need, even on a daily basis, for how to treat an infection or measles or what has been digitalized and so convenient. So much of the history and geography of our planet has been in the laptop. Our youth and our school students can just, they don't need to remember anything. He describes this in a way that very few people are, the trap we've set for ourselves by digitalizing so much of our knowledge. And then there was reference made to Jem Bendel, who is the professor at Cumbria University in the UK, that wrote just 10 months ago this paper where he had been a professor of sustainability leadership, and he'd taken a year off to look at climate change, and he came out realizing that everything he'd been teaching, most everything he was teaching, wouldn't be really applicable. And he had the courage, and he described it recently. It was on when he was giving a talk in Australia, and weeks beforehand, he was sort of wondering if he dared, do I dare say this? I'm going to be ruined. And then he found, after he gave this talk, which became his paper called Deep Adaptation, that there were clusters of people coming up to him and said, oh, thank you for saying that, or I've been feeling that. What I have found particularly helpful are four R's that he proposes. And I just did a day-long workshop in Oakland in an urban farm and its population, where we went through these four R's, but interactively. And I'll tell you what they are, but you'll see them online. The first R is resilience. And he defines that as, what are the values and what are the behaviors that we have and want to hang on to? And I'm so familiar with these four. I'll tell you the other three, but I was startled that when in the workshop what we did was we had everybody, we were about 20 only, 20, 25. We counted out by fours and had all the ones and twos meet separately. So you'd meet in a group with a separate one of these. So you'd be in a group with this resilience. And they were mostly in their 20s and 30s, but just popping ideas. And it was a tonic. Yes, we can make it. It was so wonderful. All right, that's the first one, is what do we need to, what do we already have that we want to be sure to keep and use? The second R is relinquishment. I just love the way that sounds. It makes it sound so silky. It's just letting go. What are the values and behaviors we need to let go of, and expectations? My group, you want to know, was the third R, which is, I call it restoration. What are the values and habits and behaviors that we are kind of used to have? What do we want to go back and bring forward from the past? And it was fun doing that with this young people from different colors and cultures there, and what was coming up. And it all seemed so inviting. And then the fourth, which is a wonderful question for us, and I'll close with that, reconciliation. What do we want to make peace with while we can? In our family, in our neighborhood, in our class, in our politics, in our species, in our work, in our community, in our internationally, globally. So I close with that. Looking forward to the good times we'll have as we think more and more and feel in us the joys of the reconciliation that can come with this adventure upon us. Thank you.
That was a talk and calling out for inspiration from other writers of our time by Joanna Macy, the environmental activist, author, scholar of Buddhism and deep ecology, was one of two keynote speakers at the New School at Common Wheels Resilience Project in Bolinas, California. She spoke on June 6, 2019, a few weeks after her 90th birthday. You can see a free video of the full talk and open question session on the website of the New School at Common Wheel. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.